Jared Dillon joins us again, the best-selling financial author. JaredDillonMoney.com is the website. Jared, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Since we last spoke, we have a new administration and new economic theories and policies in play. What's your overview of all of this?
I think on balance, things are pretty positive. I think there's definitely some negatives. You know, I'm concerned about tariffs. I think the tariffs are a mistake on Trump's part. I mean, obviously, he loves tariffs. He's been talking about them for years. You know, tariffs, there's a lot of things not to like about tariffs. I am a free trader. I actually kind of liked globalism back in the mid-2000s when we were importing cheap goods from the rest of the world and exporting finance. That arrangement worked out fine. I think that some politicians have a fetish with manufacturing jobs. They want to reshore manufacturing, and my attitude on this is like, look, like these are jobs that are tedious and stultifying, and you know, why are these attractive jobs? Like, why can't we switch to a knowledge and services economy? So I have big problems with Trump's trade position, but in terms of taxes and other things, it's actually looking pretty positive.
You wrote, I'm going to go through a dumb analysis for you. Biden was, you wrote, positive for stocks, negative for bonds, positive for the dollar. Trump is the opposite of Biden. Therefore, Trump will be negative for stocks, positive for bonds, negative for the dollar. Now, what are you saying there?
Well, you know, Trump is in a lot of respects diametrically opposed to Biden. He is doing the opposite of what Biden did throughout his term. And I'm just making an observation here. You know, I mean, the irony is that stocks went up a lot under Biden, and Biden was perceived, I think rightfully so, as a very anti-business president. And nonetheless, stocks went up a lot. Trump is a very pro-business president. You know, there's precedent for this. If you go back to when Reagan was inaugurated in 1981, and the, you know, he was a very pro-business president, and the stock market really ran into trouble the first two and a half years of his term. It wasn't until about 83 or 84 that stocks started to take off. So I think something similar could happen this time. And, you know, Trump was inaugurated not just a few days ago. The stock market is kind of unchanged since then. Mm-hmm. I actually think there's more downside than upside here.
Why?
Well, it's a matter of markets discount things, okay? Markets price things in. And I think there's a decent chance that the markets have almost fully priced in the 4 years of growth that we're going to get in under Trump in just a span of a couple of months leading up to the election. I think it's mostly priced in.
I wonder what that means about interest rates and the Fed.
Well, you know, what I will say is that, you know, the dollar has weakened a bit in the last few days. Basically, which is really a function of tariffs being priced in. Tariffs make the dollar stronger. And the dollar strengthened relentlessly going into the inauguration with the idea that Trump was going to put some across-the-board 25% tariff on all imported goods. And that hasn't happened. You know, he's talking about 10% tariffs on Canada and Mexico, and that's kind of up in the air. And he said earlier today, I think, or last night, that he's sort of backtracking on tariffs on China. So you're starting to see the dollar weaken a bit, and I think it's going to continue to weaken. And Trump explicitly wants a weaker dollar. He does, because that is how we manufacture and export more. J.D. Vance said so in the campaign.
Do you think that, that's interesting, although would you also agree that we really don't know what the tariffs will be, what the implications of less regulations will be? We won't know until we know. This is a conversation I've had with other guests this week. There's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of worry. There's a lot of cheering. But we really won't know the impact of these things until they actually happen.
No, that's true. And, you know, the other thing that we haven't talked about yet is taxes. You know, I think it's kind of a done deal that we're going to make the 2017 tax cuts permanent. I think that's definitely going to happen. But there could be a whole rethinking of the tax code. You know, the rate structure, which is pretty progressive, could be flattened. We could have a flatter tax or a flat tax. Trump has even made comments about getting rid of the income tax altogether and just funding the government through tariffs, which is impossible. But just, you know, just the fact that we're even talking about this, you know, I think there's going to be a real rethinking of the tax code and how we collect revenue, and it might result in significantly lower taxes for a lot of people.
One last thing. You do like the Treasury Secretary, don't you?
Yes, he's a local boy. You know, I'm here in South Carolina, and he's from a couple miles away in Conway. And he's incredibly sharp. He was the chief investment officer at Soros, one of the best rates and FX traders in the world. And he has assembled a dream team at Treasury. You know, if you go back under Obama when Jack Lew was Treasury Secretary, you just had all political people in charge of Treasury. They weren't finance people. And Bessent really has, like I said, he's got a dream team at Treasury.
Good to know. And always good to visit with you. I'm out of time today, but let's come back and see how this administration handles these things, Jared.
Excellent. Great. Looking forward to it.
Here's Bill McHenry. He's the member of the IHA, the International Housewares Association, Board of Directors, and a longtime exhibitor at the Inspired Home Show, which is a big deal in Chicago. And it's happening in March, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Bill?
That's right, Jen. It's March 2nd through the 4th.
So why are you and I talking about it today?
Well, I'm really glad you asked me that. I have always viewed the Inspired Home Show as our Super Bowl, which is timely since the Super Bowl is coming up here in a few weeks. We are based in the northwest suburbs, and we've been a member of the Housewares Association for about 15 years, and I just can't say enough about the association and the show. But it's amazing how this show is the economic impact of Chicago with this show has been just outstanding.
Give me an example.
Well, you know, when people come in, there's over 1,500 vendors. The show is not open to the public, but there's 1,500 vendors. And as an example with Widgeteer, we bring in five people into our booth. So you multiply even with our five times 1,500, there's a lot of attendees. And then the buyers from all over North America and some international buyers also come to the show. And so you have hotel rooms, you have dinners out, you have cabs, you have Ubers, and so on. So there's a huge impact to the city.
I can imagine. Did you say 1,500 people are going to be here for the show?
No, there will be about 50,000 people at the show. I said 1,500 vendors like Widgeteer.
Yeah, right. And then what kind of things will these 50,000 people be displaying?
Well, that's what's really fun, John. We focus on the home and housewares industry, of course. You'll see things from gadgets to, like in our case, we're going to be introducing a lot of new serving trays, and you'll see candles. You're going to see pet supplies, which is kind of different for this year. There'll be travel goods. There'll be really anything you can think of for your home in any room of your home.
Is there a trend? Is it artificial intelligence? Is it robotics? What's the area that these things are heading in?
You know, what really seems to be heading is people are really enjoying entertaining in their homes again. With the COVID that happened 4 or 5 years ago, the consumer perhaps moved away a little bit from restaurants and started realizing they could really have fun entertaining in their homes. And we've capitalized on that, I think.
So are you talking about like cooking accessories, television sets, audio components, chairs to lounge in? What does that mean then?
It wouldn't be any electronics to speak of as far as TVs. But there would be things like we're actually launching a new item that's going to be a combination of Instant Pot and a grill and so on. You'll see a lot of gadgets. You're going to see a lot of serveware, dishes, plates, and so on.
You're the CEO of Widgeteer. You mentioned that company. What does Widgeteer do and make?
Widgeteer is a manufacturer of glassware and woodware for serving. We also manufacture gadgets. We've been in business for about 15 years, and we're based in Crystal Lake.
What do you imagine the economic impact is going to be of this show in March?
Well, the what I understand from the two Chicago group is that they believe it's as much as $44 million. And during those probably 5 to 6 days, the show is 3 days long, but the 5 to 6 days of setup and so on.
Yeah.
But the one thing I think that people may forget is, and a perfect example, is I have vendors from all over the world, and they love Chicago. So they come back with their families for travel, for vacation. And Chicago becomes a big hit. So it's not just the show itself. It's all these other side trips that vendors and so on take.
It's funny because 50,000 was the number that they kept advertising for the DNC when it came to town. And that just seemed like this overwhelming number. And I thought, I'm pretty sure that we get conventions that will bring that many and even more people in. And sure. this is one of them. This will be one of the bigger shows in the first quarter of the year, though, won't it?
It is the largest show in the first quarter of the year for Chicago, yes.
I wish we could go, Bill. It's a shame that it's... I guess it's a McCormick place. I guess there's not room for everybody. It'd be nice if we could all go.
You know, that's been a conversation with the Housewares Association for years. It's always been a not-for-public show. It would change. It really would probably change the show if the consumer was involved with it. But, gosh, I have friends that are always asking me and hitting me up for badges to come to the show, and I always have to say no.
Yeah. Well, have a great show, and let's connect again when it's in town. I hope the weather and everything goes well. Bill McHenry is a member of the International Housewares Association. He's that guy over at Widgeteer in Crystal Lake. Good luck, and thanks for saying hi, Bill.
Thanks. I appreciate it, John. Have a good weekend.
Today's the 24th. Sunday, the 26th, is International Clean Energy Day, and that matters a lot to the people in Decatur, Illinois, because that's where TCCI Manufacturing is. We've talked to Kara Demergen-Huss there, the senior vice president, before. She joins us again. Hi, Kara. Welcome back.
Well, hi. Hi, John. How are you? Happy International Day of Clean Energy as we approach that day.
Yeah. What's your business? I know we've talked before. Those who didn't hear you last time, what do you all do there?
Sure. We are a global supplier of compressor technology for both ICE and electric vehicles in the commercial vehicle industry.
What's ICE?
Combustion vehicle.
Internal combustion engines. That's right. Right. That's
yes.
Right. So you provide compressors for these vehicles, gas and electric. What's a bigger part of your business? What's the trend in your business?
Well, the compressor itself, we're a cooling component, so a really important part of the thermal management system. We make air conditioning to cool the cabin or the battery in electric vehicles. And a really critical part as we think about the electric vehicles, we think about range and performance and efficiencies. And so this whole clean energy day for us is just a reaffirmation of our global mission, bringing together industry partners, government, and communities to make an impact. And that's really what our whole EV innovation hub is that we're bringing together here in Decatur.
How's business been?
It's been really great. I mean, you know, obviously, while policy is shifting, our momentum and commitment remains really strong. Electrification isn't going anywhere. It's a global trend we see moving forward. And we're excited to be part of that community and commitment to advancing our customers' path to net zero.
That's an interesting point. I know that the new administration is very interested in fossil fuels and not so interested in electric vehicles. They've canceled the $7,500 discount on your taxes if you buy an EV, and it's all about drill, baby, drill. But more than half of the new cars, I heard this, in China are now electric. More than half of the new car purchases in China are electric vehicles. And if American manufacturers want part of that billion-person market, we have to figure out how to make electric cars and make them economically and efficiently. So I think that's sort of the counterweight to maybe the politics of the day in this country. I hope that resonates well for your business.
Yeah, look, John, I see, you know, a big part of what we're doing is U.S. Onshoring production here in the United States and creating a made in America product for our customers. You know, we work really closely with OEs across the world. Global localization is a real thing, and U.S. manufacturing is a big part of that. And our electric compressors are going to be manufactured right here in Decatur, Illinois. And we're integrating in a large climatic center for research and innovation. And then when we think about that, it's more than just electric vehicles. It's really embracing that integration of new technologies, advancing ways to ensure efficiencies and reliability as we all are working hard in this medium and heavy duty space to transform the marketplace. So
it does sound like this is a headwind.
Happening.
But it sounds like this is a headwind for you, right? Like, I can say the world is going that way, but you're in Decatur. Are you worried about the new policies?
You know, policies are going to shift when changes happen in administration. And as a business, we have to be ready for those. And we are ready for those. And we see this as an opportunity to really continue to drive forward our commitment across our product portfolio.
What does that mean?
Well, we have, you know, a depth and breadth of product portfolios. And so whether it's our combustion and mechanical vehicle compressor and looking at ways to integrate new technologies so we have efficiency in those products as well, I think sustainability is a big piece of our company and our mission and our goals going forward.
Yeah. So if this administration doesn't like electric vehicles so much, they like gas-powered ones, you can ramp up there, and then who knows, maybe you get Democrats someday and they like green energy again, and you can accommodate that branch as well, right?
Well, exactly. But, you know, overall, when you think about it, like I said, we're working really closely with our OEMs customers, and we don't see a slowdown in this movement towards electrification. We see that trend and that path forward and production still happening. So we're anticipating a strong next few years in this industry. And like you said, those trends are moving forward. So.
Who are your customers by name? What companies buy your products?
Well, we work with a variety, again, in the commercial vehicle. So anything from a same-day delivery vehicle on the road all the way up to a heavy-duty trucking or transport refrigeration. So people like Caterpillar, International, Daimler Truck North America, Scania, MAN, just a few of our customers, Carrier, Thermo King. So a variety of different types of businesses across applications and sectors.
Right. But so these compressors, which are part of air conditioning and freezing systems, aren't in Fords and General Motors and Teslas. You're more the bigger vehicles, the commercial grade?
Correct. Commercial grade, class 3 to class 8.
Does so do you do a lot of trade internationally then, or business internationally?
Oh, yes. We have manufacturing facilities all over the world. And a big part of our global strategy is global localization to make sure we can deliver and perform for our customers where they need us.
Do you worry about tariffs? Will that impact your business?
You know, we've dealt with tariffs over the last several years, and you know, we've put a good business strategy in place to be able to help us manage that for and with our customers.
So,
but we are keeping a close eye on that, John, for sure. There are impacts that, like on all businesses, a tariff has an impact on us financially, and so we are watching that closely as we move forward.
How many? I love that this business is in Decatur. Yeah. I don't know that that should be surprising or not, because John Deere International, Harvester, Caterpillar, those are businesses which have thrived around the world in the Midwest and in central Illinois. Yeah. But maybe yours isn't the household name that some of those are. How many employees do you all have?
Worldwide, we have 1,000 employees. So really continuing to grow our footprint here in our home headquarters in Illinois. We see a lot of opportunity here in Illinois. Governor Pritzker and our legislators have been big advocates for clean energy. And as we think about growing and developing our business and increasing some of the manufacturing that we're doing here in the U.S., we hope to see some big announcements here coming in the near future on some expansions that we'll be doing in addition to our EV Innovation Hub.
Well, let's talk about that and more about the Innovation Hub. I know we laid that out last time, but we'll do a refresher course on that in our next visit. It's great to hear that this business is doing well and is poised to continue to do well in Decatur. It's nice to talk to you. Keep up the good work, and let's check in again soon.
Hey, thanks, John. Nice talking to you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio, and that was Kara Demergian-Huss, the Senior Vice President of TCCI Manufacturing there in Decatur, WGN. More business news now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The W Hotel in Chicago's Loop is being rebranded. Cranes reports it'll be accompanied by a renovation of the property. The 403-room hotel is located at 172 West Adams and will now be called the Midland Hotel Chicago. If that sounds familiar, it's because that's the old name of the hotel before it became a W in 2001. The renovation will happen in two phases that will include an overhaul of the lobby and updates to all of its rooms. There are new leaders of one of Chicago's wealthiest families. Bloomberg reports Bill Crown has been named as president and CEO of Henry Crown & Company after the death of his brother Jim Crown in 2023. Brother Steve Crown has been named executive chairman of the board. Several non-family members have also been appointed to the board. Crown Family Philanthropy supports local cultural institutions. The Crown name adorns buildings at McCormick Place, at the Museum of Science and Industry, University of Chicago, and Northwestern University. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Here is Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And yesterday we talked about how the GLP-1 drugs are changing the way food is merchandised in grocery stores.
I think there's a revolution about to happen.
And it's hard to avoid seeing commercials about the weight loss drugs.
Especially this time of year with all the football games. Something about football fans and weight loss medication.
Dr. Jeffrey Copen of Northwestern Medicine, he was on with John Williams a few days ago.
We're still learning how to properly use the medication, who really needs it, who can benefit from it.
Chicagoan Erica Beth Levin did not benefit when she took Ozempic.
And ended up in the hospital for days and being told that I was lucky to be alive.
She will tell us about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Time was not something Erica Beth Levin had enough of. As a busy mother of two children, a wife, a CEO, and founder of a rapidly expanding food company, she was stressed. But it was all good.
I love my job. I love my family. Like, I'm a very happy person.
But there was one thing she wanted to change.
And I decided to start Ozempic to lose the final 5-10 pounds that almost every single woman I know tries to lose her entire life.
And within the first hour,
I was sweating profusely, confusion, wooziness, dizziness.
She called her husband and her father. They rushed her to the ER.
And my blood sugar had dropped to 20 and my heart rate had dropped to 40. If I had passed out, I would have gone into a diabetic coma.
A big surprise to Erica, who had expected this to be an easy hack to lose a few pounds.
And that if it's done in a medical environment and under supervision, it should be fine.
Erica did not get her Ozempic from a doctor who would have told her that taking it with the migraine medication that she was on was dangerous.
A lot of people that are taking this without a prescription are obtaining it through medical spas or estheticians.
Erica is well known in the Chicago food community and is active on LinkedIn, where she posted an essay about her ordeal. You can read it at WGNradio.com. And she hopes that if you are tempted to take Ozempic or the like without a doctor's supervision, don't. No supervision necessary for this. It's National Peanut Butter Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Michael Muser's here, co-owner of the two Michelin starred ever and the Jean Bachet Awards director. Michael, you're on WGN. Thanks for saying hi. How are you?
I'm great, and thank you for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
What's a big-time chef like you doing in the middle of the day? Are you at a mart picking up radishes, or what are you doing?
Well, thankfully, I'm the restaurateur side of my partnership, so I'm not a chef, so I don't have to go in the kitchen or worry about anything else, but I have to worry about all the other stuff.
Like what?
Oh, reservations, service, hiring, training, making sure all the bills get paid, that kind of stuff.
All the non-fun stuff, in other words.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So tell me about these awards that are coming up.
Yeah, so I'm the director of the Jean Bachet Awards, or we call them the Bachet Awards, which are named after a great Chicago chef, Jean Bachet, who had a restaurant in Wheeling, Illinois in the 1970s and went on to win national acclaim. And that restaurant kind of set off, in a way, what would be graduating classes of great Midwestern chefs and kind of start the journey to open up restaurant after restaurant and start what I consider like a culinary lineage that exists here in Chicago. And it is the foundation that has given birth to all of these incredible restaurateurs and chefs that we have in our city today.
Hmm. So the award then is what? Is it a dinner? Do people go, or is it just something
so
you hand out?
What the Bachet Awards are is basically like a night at the Oscars for the culinary universe that exists just in our city. You know, we've always felt that Chicago is such a vibrant community. We have so many restaurants that open every single year that it actually makes sense to basically take a pause and look back on the previous year and just for point of record kind of name out who was actually killing it. We have 13 categories this year. They range from best counter service, best neighborhood restaurant, best bar, and of course, chef of the year and restaurant of the year as well.
So kind of like there's the Emmys and then the local Emmys. There may be the Michelin stars that get awarded or other national awards, but then we have our own awards ceremony to make sure we recognize best in class right here.
Yes, exactly. It's it kind of makes me giggle a little bit, you know, because we kind of are that city with a chip on our shoulder. And you're absolutely correct. You know, there are these nationally known organizations like the James Beard Foundation, the Michelin Guide, and so on and so forth. But you know, they're not going to get down to the level that of counter service or neighborhood restaurant. And you know, as a Chicagoan, these restaurants are kind of like, you know, the heart of many of these communities. And so the Bachet Awards just pays attention to basically what's inside our own fishbowl and hands out awards locally for us.
So best neighborhood restaurant. I'm looking at the list here. Daisy's Po' Boy and Tavern. I won't pronounce all of these correctly. Le Bouchon, Bungalow by Middlebrow, and Kai Galani, something like that.
Yeah, Ki Golani. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm familiar with one of those, but this would be an example of just what we're talking about, right?
Yes, exactly. I would say, I mean, those are four great restaurants, right? But if you take Le Bouchon, for example, that is one of those classic kind of like French bistro restaurants that sits in a neighborhood. It's a staple of the area. And people have long known it and gone into those neighborhoods. I think that's kind of one of the fun parts about the neighborhood category. You know, there are 77 different neighborhoods in the city of Chicago, and restaurants like Le Bouchon give us reason to leave our spot and leave our neighborhood and go into somebody else's neighborhood and try out those restaurants. They're very important to the city.
I think there's a category you should subtract from the awards.
What would that be?
Best pizza.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Best Pizza is a one. This is the first time we've ever attempted to do such a thing.
It's a loser bet.
I think you would agree with me.
It's a losing proposition, sir. You'll make no friends with this.
This is what we believe it or not. We actually tried to do it the previous year, and we have a panel that makes all these selections. and it became so heated that we kind of walked away from it. And second time around, all we could get them to do was come up with that list of four.
Yep.
And then what we're going to do is the audience that's in the theater that night, this coming Sunday, there are over 400 people in the theater. On their way into the theater, they will be given a pepperoni chip, and they'll put that in a ballot box of one of those four pizza spots.
Good.
And then we're privileged and honored to have the great Steve Dolinsky show up on Sunday night, and he will be calling out the winner after the votes have been counted.
I can hear the cascade of booze now. And and those are all great restaurants. So you got Pastore's, Millie's Pizza in the Pan, Spaccanapoli Pizzeria, and Robert's Pizza and Dough. Robert comes on with us a lot. We're a little partial to him because he's nearby, and we've been having fun charting his great little pizza empire there, not too far from our radio station. Well, what fun. So what can we do? When will we find out the winners?
So the award show is this Sunday evening, and we'll be streaming it live on Instagram as the show goes on, and then we'll be posting on all the social media streams that we can who's winning as the night moves on. But one of the fun parts about the Bonche Awards, the actual award show itself, is that it sells out fast. And so the show has been sold out for weeks now, but we'll be sending out press releases literally right after the show. And everyone can look to see who the winners are. It's going to be very exciting.
Let's talk the next day, Michael Muser, the co-owner of the two Michelin starred ever. You can follow it all at the Bonche Awards, B-A-N-C-H-E-T, theboncheawards.com. Nice to talk to you, Michael.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.